Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Julia Hartley-Brewer, you're with Talk TV. Now, the Prime Minister has put Britain's defence industry on a war footing. He says he's going to increase defence spending by 3.5% a year of GDP by 2030. That's during a visit to Poland, when Rishi Sunak said the UK needed to show our enemies that we are resolute and determined. He's now in Germany discussing the very same thing. Well, joining me right now to discuss this, I'm delighted to say, is former Armed Forces Minister James Heapy. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Julia.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. I spoke to you many, many times over the years, talking about, you know, events we've been involved in, whether it's Afghanistan or support for Ukraine. And very sad to see you leaving Westminster, I have to say. You've always spoken, very straight to us and my audience on this show. So a first straight question to you, first of all, is, do you welcome the 2.5% a year spending by 2030? Is it enough? And is it soon enough?
Yes, I do welcome it. And Julia, I mean, just to, of course, over the last few weeks, I have made the case for even more money to be spent on defence. But I think that one of the things that is unfortunate about our politics is that, you know, there's a sort of, even the best of announcements somehow need to be kind of unpicked, as it needs to be more, or it needs to be sooner. Or what Prime Minister did yesterday was pretty extraordinary. £75 billion a year extra on defence within this decade, and to announce it in an election year when, you know, he could have announced yesterday £40 billion on hospitals, £20 billion on schools, £15 billion on roads, or £75 billion. On tax cuts, all of which would have been huge news. And instead, he's put that money on defence. So it will transform the MOD's finances, allow us to regrow our stockpiles, allow the current force in its current size to be properly enabled, have all the ammunition it should have, to be in the very best of condition. And that will be a big statement of intent to allies and adversaries alike that the UK is serious about maintaining a war-fighting capability. If in time we end up having a conversation about needing bigger armed forces, well, that brings with it another discussion about more money. But I think what's really important is to applaud the Prime Minister for a very brave decision yesterday that will have been at odds with what a lot of his electoral strategists will have told him would have been the best thing to spend the money.
Although there was quite a lot of criticism from backbenchers and many Tory supporters about the last budget and statements not actually having extra money for defence. I know Ben Wallace, the Defence Secretary, you worked under, and you've often spoken about this, but there's a slight slip of the tongue. You're saying it's extra £75 billion a year. It's in total. The reality is, though, we technically skip spending 2% of GDP on defence right now, but that includes things like veterans, pensions, and as worthy and important they are, they don't actually help our capability in defending our country at the current time. But also there's concern that actually an awful lot of the spending that's currently going on hasn't been well spent. Terrible record of procurement at the MOD, not getting very much for what we're actually spending, certainly not compared to what the French get, and that actually an awful lot of the spending will be used up, basically just sort of kind of refurbishing the spending we're already doing on existing military capability. So it's not going to be a huge increase in our ability to defend ourselves or wage war on behalf of our allies, is it?
I don't know that. I mean, that is kind of what I just said in my first answer, that this is not about growing the force. We're not, you know, there won't be new capabilities. Standfast may be integrated air and missile defence, which I think probably is affordable within 2.5%. But everything else, you know, this is about reversing the, in the Cold War, behind the kind of fighting echelon of our armed forces were all of these enablers, logisticians, medics, signalers, engineers that sort of gave the force real credibility. It was them that kind of sustained the force's ability to actually war fight over a sustained period of time. The scale and resilience of our defense industrial base is a really important part of our fighting capacity, because you've got to be able to replenish yourself whilst fighting. And so 2.5% does deal with all of that for the armed forces as they are currently shaped and sized. Like I said, if you want to have a discussion about growing the armed forces, then that needs more money. Yeah. But I think the worst thing you could hear from the MOD right now that really would play to all of the criticism of the department over the years is if people started getting excited and rushing off to buy new frigates or new planes or new brigades for the army. The sensible thing to do with the money that they've been given is to get the stuff they've got now working and as lethal and resilient as possible.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, Grant Shapps, the current Defence Secretary, was on a broadcast round this morning saying that actually a lot of people calling for 3% of GDP being spent on defence. And he said, well, actually, we couldn't spend that now. We wouldn't be able to actually spend that. We don't have this sort of industrial military complex here in Britain to be able to do that. Is that something that we need tackle? Because we've had net zero policies, and I'm sorry to drive these things together, but they are actually all linked up. We've got a load of policies where we inhibit our ability to, make steel, to produce cheap energy, to run factories, to produce these sort of armaments. You get into a whole heap of bother. Do we need to prioritise in what many experts are calling, and I wonder if you agree, a pre-war era rather than a post-war era? Do we need to prioritise things like defence and, frankly, throw some of these other commitments out of the window?
Sure. Look, I mean, up front, yes, I do think it's worth being in the mindset that we're in a pre-war era. Not because I think war is particularly imminent, but I think the best way to avoid war is to prepare for it. Kind of the deterrent effect of that preparation means that your adversaries may never be stupid enough to come for you if you've done that properly. I do think that there are some things that stand in the way of us properly scaling our industrial base. Some of those things are just facts of life, that we're now a pretty post-industrial economy, and our costs of production, even if you roll back a whole load of regulation, would be unlikely to be competitive with elsewhere in the world. But we do have to be sensible if we are going to offshore manufacturing, where we offshore it to, and whether it's offshored to places that are defendable when we're shipping that stuff to the UK in time of crisis. So, if we're manufacturing in the Far East and we've got to ship it through the Straits of Malacca, the Bab el-Mandeb Straits, Suez, and then on through Gibraltar, it's only the latter that I think we can have any certainty of our ability to assure free movement. So there is a thing about, at the grand strategic level, there is a thing about where we manufacture. And then beyond that, there is a thing about the supply chains that underpin our sovereignty. Now, in the industrial age, oil, gas, steel were the kind of three key things that underpinned sovereignty from a sort of industrial perspective.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's those things plus semiconductors and rare earth minerals. And on semiconductors, production is overwhelmingly concentrated in the Far East with all of the issues I've just mentioned around our ability to ship or fly those to the UK. And on rare earths, not only is a lot of it being mined by Chinese companies, but almost all of it, even the stuff that's being mined by Western companies, then goes to China for processing. Yeah. And that is a real problem.
There's a fatal flaw when it comes to our sovereignty.
Yeah,
well, exactly.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a fatal flaw, but it's been identified again and again, and nothing seems to get done about it. Well, can I ask you?
I think things are happening about it in that there are now economic security. There's an economic security subcommittee of the National Security Committee, which I've attended a number of times. The proceedings are top secret, and I don't want to go to prison by telling you what happens. But the government is seized of those challenges.
Okay.
And I don't know that it's fair to say, you've done nothing about this for 30 or 40 years. For 30 or 40 years, we haven't faced the state-on-state threats
that really require you to focus on your sovereignty.
Look,
a few years ago, we had a Tory prime minister and a chancellor who thought it was a good idea to have Huawei involved, a Chinese company, involved in 5G and things. Where is the biggest threat to Britain's security, whether it's economic security?
Russia.
That's clear. So do you welcome that decision by the Senate and the House of Representatives over the weekend was the representatives' vote for $61 billion of lethal aid to be sent by the US to Ukraine to help them in their fight against that Russian invasion?
Unreservedly. And I think that people have to be clear that this is for the Ukrainian defenders, the cavalry is coming in so much as they urgently need this stuff. But this isn't the decisive contribution either from the US or the UK or anybody else that decides to give further as a consequence of what's happened this week.
Okay.
This will be sufficient to keep the Ukrainians in the war for another 6 months or so.
Why don't we give them enough aid so that they can win the war?
Well, Drew, I think we have. I don't think that the thing that will determine their ability to win the war is about more gifting. More will be necessary, particularly more artillery ammunition and long-range precision missiles. But the war in Ukraine now is between a volunteer/conscript second echelon Russian army and a volunteer second echelon Ukrainian army. Both sides, their first echelon armies have been destroyed. And so what you've got is hundreds of thousands of men fighting as individuals, occasionally managing to fight in concert with the two or three or four people either side of them. The first side to achieve brigade and divisional level maneuver, synchronized with air and artillery and everything else, will be the first side to successfully mount an offensive. And therefore, the race at the moment is not just around the supply of materiel. The race is also around our ability as a donor community to train the Ukrainians at formation level, not just individual level.
That ability to fight.
I would argue that we should be doing that in Western Ukraine.
Indeed. Time is very, very tight. Just finally, briefly, can you answer this question? Because you mentioned conscription armies. Should we have conscription in the UK? Some of our allies, like Finland, got 250,000 reservists, highly trained, come back every year for their training. Should we be having a conscription army?
No. I mean, I think that there's no tradition of that in the UK, and I don't think it would add anything. In fact, I think it would pick quite a bill for the regular armed forces to manage it.
Right.
What I do think we should do, and I say this as a very overweight ex-soldier, is that it's already the law that I am liable for service within a strategic reserve. In the Cold War, people like me used to have to turn up every now and then to do a training weekend.
So you're saying we've already got
some of that.
I think
we should get back into
having
doing that.
We'll have to leave it there. James Heapy, it's such a pleasure to have you back on the show. I hope you'll come back again soon. Really appreciate all your insights. Former Armed Forces Minister, still a Conservative MP. For now, James Heapy, thank you. I just want to get to your messages now because we're asking about the Prime Minister announcing that £75 billion increase in defence spending by 2030. Putting Britain on a war footing, do you back it or not? Tell us why. Give us a call, 03 03444991000. Text 87222 or get in touch on X at Talk TV. Ian says he can announce what he likes, but he isn't going to implement anything as he'll be out on his ear by November. This is a fair point. Carl says, yes, I back it. If we don't increase our military technology, then we won't have a country. And Tommy says it's another promise that will never happen. You've also been on the phones as well. Let's go to Yousaf in Leicester. Hello, Yousaf.
Hi, Julie. OK?
Yeah, thank you very much. So do you agree with the announcement?
Not at all. I think the biggest threat to the UK is the UK. UK policies, I mean. You know, I mean, the thing is we've been into Iraq, killed off hundreds of thousands of people there. Been
to Afghanistan. Actually, it was mostly done by Al-Qaeda, but... Most of the killing was done by Al-Qaeda, not by us.
What, the people in Iraq that we bombed?
Yeah.
Talking about Al-Qaeda. Yeah. Al-Qaeda okay. dropped the bomb.
Yeah, most of the deaths in Iraq have been killed by Al-Qaeda. But anyway, carry on, yeah.
Yeah, that's well.
Sorry, that's your opinion. No,
but
it's
I mean,
not.
The facts
not my opinion.
The facts,
anyway, yeah. So
the facts are different. But anyway, Julia, my point is, look, the thing is, we can't keep on intervening in countries and expect no repercussions. That prevention is better than cure.
Why you're saying that we bring it on ourselves? Well, you know what? Well, we didn't intervene in Syria. How did that work out?
We didn't intervene in Syria. We've interfered via proxy or via supporting genocidal regimes like Iraq. What's happening in Israel and Gaza right now? What's happening in Gaza?
Okay, it's not a genocidal regime. What about Ukraine? Did we incite the invasion of Ukraine? Will we be incite if and when, and it's very much a when, China invades Taiwan? Will we incited that in the West?
The thing is that we pick and choose. No, that's what I'm saying. We pick and choose if we want to support a country or we don't support.
Yes, that's literally how countries operate, yes.
I was supporting Israel regardless of their mass killing that is taking place.
Because it's a democracy. We support Israel because it's the only democracy in the Middle East.
Regardless of hypocrisy, the point is...
No, not regardless. No, because it's not regardless, is it? We support countries that we have shared values with, and we support countries that support our national interests. That's why we support Israel.
We should have supported the Yorkshire Ripper years ago as well, because that's exactly what Israel is doing in Gaza.
Yousaf, I'm embarrassed for you for making such a stupid comparison. Did we bring on the war in Ukraine?
I didn't say we brought the war on Ukraine. I'm not saying every single war.
Oh, not every single war. But wait a minute, I thought you said us having our defence capability and us getting involved in other countries was why we face these difficulties. Did we bring on the war in Ukraine? So, no. So, we'd still need to have military capability, wouldn't we?
I didn't say we brought the war in Ukraine. My point is, look, we can't just pick and choose where we want to go.
Yes, we can. That's literally what countries do. Yes.
No, surely we should have we should be more sensible or more, should I say, humanitarian, in the sense that we should want to preserve life. By stopping
countries being invaded, yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. My point is, if it's a defence, is one thing, but now what's happening in Israel, that's not defence.
Yes, it is.
If you lost your mind, if you think that's defence.
No, I haven't lost my mind, but also don't use stealing. I'd also don't misuse words like genocide. I'm very critical of policies which I think are inappropriate, and I take it on the Israeli government representatives when we have them on the show about policies in terms of civilian deaths and civilian lack of medical aid and food aid. But
Julia,
it's not a genocide.
Did you watch that interview with the journalist who interviewed the Israeli the IDF soldiers just a couple of days ago? He himself is saying we're committing war crimes. He's admitted,
I mean, I'm sorry, but no, if you're going to refer to Israel as a genocidal nation and genocidal policy, I'm going to have to leave it there, only because they're shouting in my ear because I'm well over time. But Yousaf, couldn't disagree with you more fundamentally, but very much appreciate your call. Thank you very much indeed. Up next, we're going to talk about two-tier policing by the Met Police. I'm Julia Hartley-Brewer. You're with Talk TV.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code PROGRAM.